You're listening to the Tribe Tech Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tribe Tech Podcast. I'm Faiza Khan and my co-host is Robert Hillier.
Hello.
Today we're talking about how farms from London and other bigger cities are coming to the Southwest and basing themselves out of our science parks.
Here's Faye Davis from Plymouth Science Park.
There's quite interesting collaborations and cross-pollination that occurs. And we're a very safe space for university spin-outs and SMEs and people starting out. Our primary objective is to support our tenants.
But first, let's hear from Andy Doyle from Firmly, which is based in Totnes.
His company is making the Olympics more interactive for fans around the world who obviously can't go. Let's find out how.
Because at the Tokyo Olympics, there's nobody there, or minimum amount of people there, especially if you're a Canadian team or not one of the biggest teams like the USA team, you know, the amount of fans who would have been able to get there is limited. So we've done various things for them using Firmly. One of them is every fan can get what they call a fan card, which is like a memento with their picture in it. And it's a still image for them to keep or share on social media. We're also creating some mosaics, video walls, overlaid and blended with the maple leaf. And then when they win a gold, that gets converted to the same thing, but with a gold medal sort of semi-transparent on it. And that's, and each and every fan gets one of them if they record a message to celebrate. And I think one of the coolest things we're doing is that so they've picked, I think, 12 athletes from the team. And each individual athlete, you can create a thing of support for the athlete, which gets put on monuments in the athlete's hometown.
That's amazing. And you guys did something similar last year, right? So all of this sort of became bigger than it was during lockdown, because obviously more and more fans couldn't attend games. So you did this last year in, was it California?
No, that was in New York for the tennis. Wimbledon was cancelled. So the biggest tennis tournament in August was August last year in the USTA, United States Tennis Association. That was a little bit different because we were working for the actual event owners. We were able to put stuff on screens around their version of centre court, which is called the Arthur Ashe Court. Obviously, with the Tokyo Olympics, the Olympic teams don't have the ability to do that. So instead of putting them in stadiums, because they can't, they're putting it in the hometowns of the athletes and on social media.
But I see this sort of technology growing much bigger as well in coming years, because also what's going to happen is, I think, for fans, for example, who are people who are Liverpool fans or Chelsea fans or from all over the world, Japan and Korea and everywhere else, and they can't actually attend the games, this is also a really great way of them being able to be part of the action, but not having to pay for the tickets and come over.
Exactly. I mean, you look at some of the bigger clubs around the world, especially in football, more than any. You know, Manchester United has hundreds of millions of fans around the world. Real Madrid has got the biggest external following, 480 million fans they've got logged around the world, but only between 100 and 200,000 within the vicinity of the ground you could ever even attempt to go there.
One of the things I didn't realise until the Olympics began this time is that the BBC in this country is not the main rights holder. It's gone to Discovery Neurosport, hasn't it? So I've had add that into my viewing. Do you think the way that content is being dispersed so much more now means that platforms like yours have more of a part to play in giving people an extra way in to follow their team or their favourite stars, because you can't rely on, as you would have done, a sort of just traditional free-to-air broadcast thing to give you everything you want?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at what the BBC are doing this year, they're doing a highlight thing and they put it on an iPlayer where you just go in and choose which sports you want or stars you want, as you just said. That really helps. But I think when you start looking at, you know, Generation Z, or what's it called now? Generation A, Generation Alpha, they don't want to consume a broadcast. They want to consume, you know, they want to follow X person or X sport, and they want it here and they want it now, and they don't want to wait till 9 p.m. when the broadcaster is going to show it.
Although actually I was told once that this is it's been quite a common thing in the Netherlands for quite a while, that people will support a player as opposed to a team. So people would support, you know, Ruud van Nistelrooy, they'd support Dennis Bergkamp. But when you talk there about, you know, how many fans Real Madrid have or Man United have around the world, of course, a lot of people now are fans of Cristiano Ronaldo around the world and would happily swap their allegiance from Real Madrid to Juventus, because he moved there. So are you noticing that people are following this trend in how they want their content delivered as well?
Ronaldo's a great example. I mean, he earns more money from Instagram posts and social sort of brand recognition than he does from football. You know, that his business is being a social icon. I mean, I suppose one of the earliest people to do that was Beckham, wasn't it? When Beckham famously went to LA Galaxy, you know, on an amazing amount of money, they reckon they sold enough shirts within the first couple of months to pay his annual salary. A lot of the more sort of niche sports are becoming more and more sort of popular. I mean, you look at the Olympics now, surfing, skateboarding, mountain biking is a big sport in it now. And you don't follow, there's no team, it's all individuals, it's all personalities who are social media gurus because they're all under 25.
How does Filmally tap in to that then? So obviously you had the USTA big client, the Canadian Association big client. How do you broaden that out so that you are focused on those big names, those big individuals?
Just because of the nature of what we do, being the events are still the biggest thing, whether a player's, you know, got a big social following or not. And I think for us, encouraging other aspects for team loyalty is sort of the big win. So as you quite rightly said, younger fans will follow a player or they'll just switch teams. You know, some of us have followed the same football team since 1974, through good and bad. And it's good this year, Leeds United, they're back in the Premiership. Kids don't do that as much. So for us, creating loyalty with peer-to-peer content, allowing them to sort of create content which they get back and is linked to the actual players themselves and the brands and the sponsors, it all actually hopefully hooks them more, not just to the players, but to the team the players are with at that point, and creates that sort of that social interaction with other like-minded people. That's the idea.
So do you think this is why your platform is so important for the event organisers, and it makes sure that that connection is kept?
One of the biggest complaints in the US for sort of the big NFL, NHL, NBL sort of things is it's all ticketless, same in UK as well. And, you know, when I was a kid going to an event, I'd have a sort of biscuit tin with all the tickets from the concerts and the sports and stuff I'd been to, but they don't get that anymore. So it's even the simplest things, like we can create like a ticket with, you know, your seat number, the date, who was playing, who the team was. You can get that back as a memento, which you can print out or just store. And that creates sort of, you know, almost like a gamification aspect. You can collect them and then we create things like at the end of a season, you know, here's your summary of the content you created with us during your season and things like that. And all that stuff, you know, creates that sort of, oh, if I do this, I'm going to get 8 of these back, or I'm going to be, a higher profile sort of member of this club community I'm getting involved with. So it's not just a one-way thing anymore where, you know, traditionally the dad would buy 4 tickets, the family would go and see a game, they'd have a pie and a beer and they'd go home. And the only interaction was the purchase of 4 tickets from one person.
And I think also it ends up growing the fan base from a younger age as well, because it allows children to be more engaged. Because I find that when my children attend a live game, they're able to watch and it's fine. But watching football on TV or any event on TV, they can only watch highlights. They find that really, really tough for some reason. So I think having something like this is a really great way of keeping them engaged and also encouraging them then to use that engagement in real life. So then they go on and take part in those sports and obviously have a healthier lifestyle, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, so I think it's actually fantastic. And I love the scrapbook aspect of it, because it just means that you have all your memories in one space, and that's just so nice.
Exactly. And you've actually hit the nail on the head there. One of the big things sort of the data teams at sports clubs do is, you know, analyze the average age of attendance, memberships, and ticket purchases. You know, you've got all that stuff. And what we can help with is lower that age and get people to encourage to become members for longer and joining more. And as you said, then they participate more and they're more likely to kick a ball around in the park when they're kids. And then that means when they're adults, they kick around all with their kids, and it takes a momentum. So, you know, all of the franchises, whatever the sport, the more they can do to engage young people to get excited about it. I mean, with the Euros just now, my kids, they've had a goal in the garden for 2 years and they played with it loads and then forgot about it. And we were thinking of getting rid of it. So I bought a Euro 2020 board. They haven't stopped playing football since. They're in there every day kicking a ball about because they've got something. And I made them watch all the England games right up until the the last one, you know, but they felt part of it. We were doing stuff online about it and just reading and interacting with it. So I think, and it is, they're kicking the ball around.
Yeah, and of course, for 99.9% of Manchester United fans around the world, they're never going to get to go to Old Trafford. So what relationship are they going to have with that club, and how can that be built up? And you're key to that, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. And how do you add value to those people who live in South America or India or Africa? You know, you can't, they're never going to, like you say, they're never going to spend £100 on a ticket, let alone fly to the UK to watch a game. And they all do the other tours, the African Nations tours and, you know, all that sort of stuff to try and get their brand awareness out there. But with us, it's like it's a really easy way for people in different economies and lower incomes or just really remote places to get their own branded stuff back and, like you said, feel part of it. You know, can you imagine if you were in Africa and you suddenly saw Manchester United put a post out with your face on it? That'd just be amazing.
Tweet now. Tech SW Official.
That was a great chat with Andy, wasn't it? Really, really interesting. And I think what he's doing could actually, I could see that happening across the world and in all sports. Let's hear from Faye Davis from Plymouth Science Park, Paul Rowe from Rowe IT, who's based at the Science Park, and also Gavin Jones from Elixir, friend of Tribe Tech, who also runs Digital Plymouth.
Well, I am currently working as the Business Development Manager at Plymouth Science Park.
I'm Gavin, MD of Digital Product Studio, Elixir. So we build products, so mobile apps and web apps for companies like WPA. We've done stuff for people like Game and also locally like Plymouth University, all sorts of different organisations. But we also run or co-run Digital Plymouth, which is a meetup and community of digital and creative businesses across Plymouth. So trying to raise awareness of the great organisations we have here in the city.
Hi, yeah, Paul Rowe, I'm the MD of Rowe IT. So my background is in software engineering, created, formed Rowe IT back in 13 years ago now. We're a professional services company. We deliver solutions for the likes of the Met Office, the MOD, Crown Commercial Service, the Hydrographic Office, and a number of other public sector organisations.
Something amazing must be happening there, because lots of companies, as we've been reporting on Southwest Tech Daily, from all over London are coming over to Plymouth to work instead, which means, you know, there must be something in Plymouth that is attracting them. Paul, do you know what that might be?
I think there's a national shortage of talent, but I think, you know, the great thing about Plymouth is that there are two local universities on the doorstep at Exeter and Plymouth turning out high quality graduates. And I know certainly whilst recruitment isn't easy anywhere in the country, it might be a bit easier down here in that sense. And we've certainly tapped into that and have had great success. So I think there is a hotbed of talent down here, and it also is a fantastic place to live. So I think people are now looking for that work-life balance. Having the moor on the doorstep, the sea on the doorstep is a great thing. And actually, you don't need to be in the southeast anymore. You can work quite effectively from down here. Captain Jasper's, yeah, there's a whole list. So we could probably spend the whole half hour talking about why, you know, the southwest is a fantastic place to live.
I was at the G7 recently and got more than my allotted time with the head of the World Bank. One of the things that he was quite clear on in giving advice, should we need it, in terms of what we need to be doing in the Southwest to be part of post-Brexit global Britain, was to decide on what our specialism was and what our cluster might be. And he was using the example of Cambridge and saying, you know, they started out building up around the university and various tech companies, but now they're famous and they're known for their biosciences. And he was asking the question, what would the Southwest be known for? Do you think that he's right in saying that we do need to have a specialism and be known for one? And are any themes beginning to emerge, do you think, from what's happening in Plymouth?
I was chatting to a colleague the other day and they're saying that, you know, certainly in the southwest you're seeing a lot in the maritime, oceanography and environmental sectors. You've got people like the Met Office in Exeter, you've got the Hydrographic Office there as well, and that coupled with the likes of Goonhilly and the sort of spaceport going on down at Newquay, I think there's perhaps a couple of themes that we could certainly draw upon and are certainly taking shape down here.
I would say so. I mean, I think we've got a really strong sort of offshore wind potential, you know, sort of environmental and renewables is definitely on the ascendance. And obviously our marine and maritime is exemplary with you know, sort of the Devonport Royal Dockyard. You know, it's the sort of largest naval support site in Western Europe, you know, sitting alongside sort of the likes of Ocean's Gate and sort of the Marine Business Technology Centre. We've got the Turnchapel Wharf with sort of, there's a lovely growing cluster of sort of marine businesses down there, sort of Sonadyne and Talis, and, you know, and obviously the Plymouth Marine Lab and MBA, National Marine Aquarium. I mean, it's just, I think Plymouth hides its light behind a bushel very well, but there's a huge sort of and growing sort of centres of excellence in sort of quite a few sectors now.
It was definitely the climate change theme that the kind of world leaders kept coming back to. And it did sort of occur to me that other areas might be better at spinning, for want of a better word, what they're doing into the areas of climate change. But Faye, as you pointed out there, so much of what happens would come under the banner of climate change, but because we choose to call it something else and maybe be more specific, perhaps we don't always get notice for the breadth and detail of some of the work that's taking place.
Definitely. I think we do need to get better at blowing our own trumpet, and I think sort of opportunities like this are really helpful in doing that.
Just to add to that point, or one of the things that does seem to happen is that people tend to see Plymouth or the Southwest in general, Plymouth, Cornwall, even Dorset, wherever, they just seem to see it as a place that is beautiful, somewhere that's going to offer you that work-life balance. And that's usually, or more often, their first choice for choosing, or their first reason for choosing this area. But actually, the things that are happening here are pretty amazing. And so not blowing our own trumpet is actually doing us more harm than good in that way, because we're promoting ourselves as a destination to live in rather than a place where really important discussions are happening and really important innovations are happening. I mean, Gavin, with you guys, I seem to remember that you actually moved from somewhere else specifically to come to Plymouth and then create your business here.
Yeah, that's it. So I picked universities that were as far from home as possible, but still within the UK. Picked quite a few universities, and Plymouth was the one that stood in my mind for the opportunities that were here in regards to the course that was being offered, as well as the location. I think the location is a massive attractor for a lot of people. From a digital point of view, it's been, obviously there's lots of change going on locally from a citywide point of view as well, in regards to we're seeing a lot of stuff happening in the immersive space, which is like a huge attractor for a lot of people, both to study down here, but also for businesses to come down. I mean, we're seeing, all across the board, so obviously the work that's going on with the Market Hall now having, the largest immersive dome in Europe. The work that's going on with Plessy, I also think Facebook have a team based in Plessy with the stuff that's going on in developing tech from AR/VR space. And we've also got some really interesting businesses locally doing some interesting development, looking at using it like virtual reality in education, virtual reality in regards to using it as a mechanism for selling at exhibitions. So it's such an exciting area and exciting city to be in at the moment. I think, like I said, the biggest challenge we've got at the moment is kind of raising that awareness of the amazing things that are happening here. And that's why, conversations like this are really important, and to have to raise that awareness as what amazing city that we live in, from a digital but also from a location point of view as well.
We have quite a tight sort of gateway criteria for businesses to get into the Science Park at Plymouth now, because we're trying to sort of really focus on growing clusters of excellence in certain particular sectors. And we've had 20 new tenants start since the start of the calendar year, which, given the sort of global pandemic that we've all been living through, I think it's quite astonishing. You know, and people are actively seeking out the city and the Science Park as well, you know, to sort of to be based here. It's just fantastic to see.
It's a seal of approval just on its own. I mean, people aren't coming here just because it's a nice place to live, which, I mean, that is, you know, a sidebar. People are coming here because innovation is happening here. And this is the place to be if you want to create things and build things and make people's lives easier through tech.
Yeah, and we're retaining those businesses as well. I mean, from your perspective, Paul, I mean, you know, you haven't struggled to recruit and retain staff, presumably, or?
We've been fortunate. Recruitment is hard. I think that is a national problem, but, you know, there is talent down here and people do want to live and work in the Southwest, and that's that's made it easier. It's been an easier sell in that sense. But also going back to Plymouth Science Park being in your success there, Faye, I mean, I think the fact that you make it easy for small businesses to start, you know, the sort of terms that you offer, that's been really quite good at allowing entrepreneurs to make that step and to help grow the business. So I think hats off to Plymouth Science Park for enabling that.
Gavin, how are things at Digital Plymouth and how has it been going during the pandemic?
When the pandemic hit and everything kept getting locked down, we were kind of in a situation where we go, well, we're called Digital Plymouth, we can't really stop it. We should really carry on, especially when we saw people being locked at home and not being able to do anything. So we really were keen to try and keep it going as long as possible. And we've been able to keep running the events and keep bringing the community together. We're hoping September's event is going to be a face-to-face event. That's something that we've really wanted to make sure that we're doing. Maybe even shifting towards hybrid if possible so we can still engage those wider communities. So, yeah, really, really positive from our side of things that being able to keep the community together and keep people talking. That's the main thing. We really have to do everything we can to keep everyone communicating with each other, get loads of that great cross-sector collaboration going with the people that we're getting in to speak and really drive the community forward.
Finally, what is the benefit of being at the Science Park as opposed to just, you know, in an office somewhere?
Twofold, I think. One is the fact that they allow you to grow quite easily. So as I sort of alluded to earlier, when we first moved into Plymouth Science Park, it was a big step for us. And the terms of the engagement sort of gave us a lot of confidence that, you know, if it wasn't right for us, we could get out. But that actually wasn't an issue for us. And they've helped us on that growth journey. And we're now looking at our third office in the space of 4 years or so. And, you know, Faye and the team have been brilliant at supporting us on that journey. On top of that, you know, it is a nice area. That whole thing about collaborating with other organisations, you know, we've met some great companies there. And whilst perhaps we haven't had any magic or any sort of business come from that, you're always planting seeds and sowing those seeds for possible future collaboration opportunities.
Well, as we know, the clustering is becoming increasingly important to the government and to anybody around the world looking to invest. So places like Plymouth Science Park and finding their niche and their area of investment and of intent is going to become increasingly important.
Yeah, and I think actually they'll grow, but we'll also see other science parks and other areas like that popping up here and there. It's a vital resource.
Yeah, I love it when a science park pops up.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you can get every episode as soon as it's loaded. We would really, really love to hear from you and we'd really, really love your support. So thank you to everyone who has been listening. We usually turn up on the last Friday of every month.
You can tweet at TechSWOfficial or Tech Southwest on LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram.
And also check out our articles on swtechdaily.co.uk. There's always something interesting on there and things that are vital and important to our tech community here in the Southwest.
Thank you for listening.
Bye.
A Tech Southwest podcast, Tribe Tech. You can get in touch with us by tweeting Tech SW Official.